In the world of battery power, a word to the wise. Compromise elsewhere.
All right, we're back, and we're back with the champion himself, Mr. Drew Gregory. What's going on, dude?
What's up, boys? How's it going?
Congrats, champ.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Pretty wild for sure, man. But I don't know what to say, man. Just kind of shrugged the shoulders still, just in disbelief, honestly. Just like, yeah.
Bailey, you need to add the sound to the soundboard of the champ is here. For whenever Gregory comes back.
Mercer does a good job with that. I think that's all he says after a guy wins the classic when you get back to the bar or whatever.
Yeah.
Champs here. Champs here.
Is it true now, Drew, that like have you won actually everything in kayak fishing there is to win?
Nah, man. I haven't won everything for sure. Won some AOIs and won this, obviously, but this is the first championship I've ever won. You know, like if you count the three big three, the Hobie TOC, Bassmaster, and KBF National Championship. I have an AOI with Hobie, but not a TOC win. So
I'm just saying,
I've never won a championship. This is the big one, you know. So it's kind of like a weight lifted off my shoulders a little bit because I've always wanted a championship to go along with the AOIs and of course the regular season, like national wins, you know, maybe eight of those or something. And then one championship. So, but yeah, there's more to win. It's just, I don't know if I'll have a chance because, you know, kids, family, running a new series myself, that kayak adventure series, I'm not going to be fishing as many events, you know, I'm going to focus more on Bassmaster than anything. So I'm not sure how many TOCs or KBF NCs I'll be fishing, but it's fine, man. I'm blessed and enjoying what I'm doing. So can't complain.
Heck yeah, dude. Well, I mean, getting on stage for somebody that in my mind has arguably done more for the sport than the vast majority of kayak anglers. And dude, I don't even think it was 2 years ago where you were really pushing for Bassmaster to improve their ways when it came to kayak fishing, because there was a time where, let's just be blunt with it, that it seemed like Bassmaster Kayak Series was doing it just to do it. They weren't really doing it to do a good job. Were at the forefront of really helping change that, and now look at it today where
it's awesome, man. And Steve Owens was a big part of that. I mean, and I was definitely pushing and trying, and one thing that's kind of cool is, you know, when you have done it for as long as I have and you've kind of built a reputation, there's definitely a little bit of a burden of responsibility. You know what I mean? To do what you can, to not like irk the organizations and not try to push whatever or your agendas, whatever, but just try to push and grow it all for everyone. But it's kind of like the NFL draft, you know, when the first person, everyone waits to kind of sign their deals with their agent until the first player signs. So they know like how much he's making. So what we're trying to do, I think Christine's a good example of that. Russ, you know, Siddiqui won the championship, lots of other big names in the sport. I'm not and try to list them all. But whenever we have opportunities like this to push kayak fishing to the forefront and push it with some, you know, bigger non-endemic sponsors and use this, what it's really cool is we can kind of open up some avenues and some platforms for the future of the sport, if that makes sense. So you got to push it and do what you can, but at the same time, not pushing somebody away because you're being too pushy. So it's this little juggling act you got to do with some of these bigger companies and sponsors. So we're trying.
Well, I'd say you're doing a hell of a job, bro. I'm obviously pumped for you. There's a lot of people in your corner that are pumped for you. And dude, let's get into this freaking win, man.
Yeah.
Lake 10 killer. It looked like through keeping up with the standings, things like that, that it definitely wasn't easy for anybody. It definitely was tough. There's guys that had a great like one day, whether it was day one or day two, but it had a flop the other day. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like they were moving actively. Things were changing. So kind of walk us through, because I think your time that you shine, and I told you this in person, that I think out of the entire scene of kayak fishing, I think you are the greatest kayak angler ever in regards to tournament strategy. And I think that comes in practice. like the amount of driving strategy you do. So kind of walk us through that.
Yeah, man, you're making me spill the juice here, and that's all right, because that's what we're here for. You guys are here to learn, and I'm going to share a little bit about my strategy at this event. So first of all, the second day, I mean, had the word kill and the word 10 killer, I knew what I was doing when they said that. I mean, I knew exactly what I was doing. I'm studied the entire United States. I know all the fisheries. I fished a lot of them, you know, back when I traveled with Jackson and Hooked in Wild Waters, and then now with Crescent and tournaments, and then running my own series. You're constantly looking and scouring the map at where's some hidden gem fisheries and where's the place we can go that kayak can kind of excel and you know, be a new kayak fishing destination that may not be so known by the bass boat world. So I already knew about the Illinois River and Lake 10 Killer and what was unique about it, in the sense that, you know, they put the Tennessee River strain smallmouth in there back when there was like a fish kill. They also, I believe, put Florida strain largemouth. So it's a total different animal than Grand Lake. I mean, in a lot of ways, because Grand Lake has the Neosho smallmouth, which were native to 10 killer, but they don't get big, like 16, 17 inches, right? So you got to understand like all about the world of bass fishing, where they live. And I just knew that it was where I was going to go, because I've always wanted to fish it. It's been on a bucket list. I know there's giants that live there. I definitely was surprised at how big the largemouth got in the river. That was what was surprising to me, but I knew some big smallmouth were there. But of course, there's big smallmouth in the lake too, and largemouth. But fitting my style, of course, you know, I was going to, you know, choose to go to the river because the lake was going to be more of a live scope. It was going to be a bigger player. It's not like there's grass or vegetation, something to punch, some like cypress trees and swamps and backwaters to get away, you know, in a kayak, which is what I love to do. It was just the river. It was all I basically had, which was fine. But anyway, I realized that, you know, on first day of practice, caught a 20 and a half largemouth, like a 5.5 pounder, maybe a little bit bigger. It was super fat and heavy. And caught a 19 and a half ish smallmouth and small, like another 19, 17 inch largemouth. So I knew that's what I was doing. And I, so speaking of strategy, so what I did is I went to the northernmost access, our launch, or designated launch on Saturday. And I went there first. Again, this is all like strategy talk, like you're saying. I went there first because less people would be pre-fishing on Saturday than Sunday or Monday, because some people aren't even getting there except for maybe 2 days before. They get only 2 days of pre-fishing, or three. So 4 days before, I'm hitting that spot. And there was actually a boat ramp. And then if you take a road to the left and kick your Tacoma in four-wheel drive, you can go down all the way to the end of that public access, another half mile up the river, and just launch right from the gravel bank right there. So I did that to stay kind of out of sight. You know, it's no different than any elite guy, man. They're out there. They don't want to be seen on their juice, on their stuff. They don't want to be visible at all. When they find it, they want to disappear, just vacate that area and hope that nobody else stumbles across it. So I went upstream, you know, a ways, saw kind of how far I could go, which was as far as I wanted to go, but also realized I needed to make some improvements on my Torquedo setup. So the next several days, I never was seen at that ramp again. I was out on the lake at one spot, trimming the Torquedo properly, actually making sure it could chew the full amount of water as shallow as possible, right? And and once you get the suction going and it goes, you can lean back and get it to go, and then you can lean forward and you can go even faster, and it'll stay chewing and it'll get shallower. So I was able to draft, and I'd say full speed, maybe about 6 or 7 inches of water with that thing. So no different than a jack plate or something, you know, someone poche, because what I'm doing is basically Keith Poche, just the kayak world. Just my setup is totally, you know, defined, you know, for those smaller backwaters and rivers and creeks, you know, it's just set up for that. So I used to be able to hit 6.2 miles an hour in my Scholey, the Crescent kayak Scholey I'm using, but now I'm going 6.7. I just kind of NASCAR engineered it the best I could, weight forward, and I'm going 6.7 now instead of 6.2. And so
have you heard of anybody else doing this before? Maybe Jeff Little, if any. I've never heard of any.
Jeff Little is really good at it. And he's obviously a resource that has helped me out a lot. And you guys can watch his videos on the Little Stuff on his YouTube channel. And he teaches, I'm sure, if you just consume it all, he's probably taught a little bit about all the stuff on there. But you know, he helped me out. He's the Torquedo, you know, one of the managers over there for the pro staff before he left to go to Boondocks. But I just kind of got it rolling and trimmed perfectly. And then that helped me because I have to attain up some pretty steep inclines. You know what I mean? For the rivers, it's not like there's a big rapids. It's more just like this steep gradient that gets real shallow, and it gets, you know, 6-7 inches, you know, and I can float in about 4, 3.5, 4, probably somewhere in there, but 6-7 inches, I need that motor to go. And I had to paddle super hard with the motor on full speed and use my whitewater kayaking experience to understand how to read currents and where to like ferry across here to get up a little further and go back there and which angle to take while I'm paddling as hard as I can and going full speed with the Torquedo just to get up some of the stuff. So I knew when I practiced, I actually didn't practice the first 2 miles-ish, 2, 2.5, because I knew most people were going to hit that and beat it up and fish it. Even if you found there, you'd probably be competing with other people or fishing for a bunch of fish that have already been caught in practice, you know? So
right.
I focused all my efforts about 2.5 miles up and beyond. Long way. I mean, really far, probably like 8 or 9 miles up. And so every day since then, I put in at different access points further up because I wanted to learn how to catch them in the river, even if it was further up. I mean, I fished as far as 13 to 14 miles up one day, not to like think I was ever going to get that far with battery power and everything, just to learn how to catch them in the river, if that makes sense. I don't want to beat up my fish. I just want to go catch and learn how to catch them and then apply that into the section that I know I've already found good ones, because I had like 91.5 inches in 4 hours on the first day pre-fishing. So anyway, I ended up launching at it, like I said, a couple of different public access points that were further up. And then basically what I did is I floated down one day all the way to the point that I'd gotten all the way up from that first day of practice. You know what I'm saying? That when I went up about 3.5 miles. So then when I stopped there, I was kind of keeping an eye on making sure I didn't see anybody else. When I stopped at that point, I went back upstream just to make sure I could complete it all. Went all the way up. Like I said, I went as far as 13 or 14 miles up, not to like do it, actually thinking I was going to need to go that far and the tournament, but just in case, you know what I mean? Like if I managed the battery power properly, like I wanted to find everything I could that was, I thought would be to myself. So that's what I did. Yeah. And caught some big ones way upstream too. Nice 19.5 inch smallie way up there. And a couple key fish came from way up, but yeah, that was the strategy that I employed. And to your point, it was just worked out, man.
That's awesome. And yeah. To that extent, like, I think that's next level, like unbelievable. But Anthony Geis here, any specific methods of setting up the kayak for weight distribution? I know you mentioned motor angle, but also you leaning like back to get it some grip on the prop and then leaning back forward. Is there anything though that you put to any more additional weight in the back or in the front on purpose?
So what I did is I put my two extra batteries were in the front hatch to get more weight there. And then one sometimes would be even in the little cubby that the Scholly has. It's like a fish finder cubby. That's three up there. And I also got our high seat from Crescent. Now the Scholly's not made for the high seat. You can certainly use it in the high position, but in the low position, the bar is actually hit, so it doesn't work. So what I did is actually moved it forward because I wanted my body weight to be further forward too than the actual seat position. It sits in naturally in the Scholly. So I moved it a little bit further forward and used those 3/4 inch cam straps that come with the Scholly to crank it down. And it kind of made little nice impressions on the pad kit and just kind of held right there tight. So I'm actually probably like six or eight inches further forward than you would normally be seated. So between those three batteries and my personal weight being that much further forward, it really made the difference. And I mean, it was cruising, man. It was pretty sweet. But yeah, that's a good question.
Jeez. But has this given you new ideas for Crescent now for maybe a new model in the future?
Yeah. I mean, I've always known like about, you know, again, talking with Jeff Little, I kind of know, you know, where if you're designing a boat that's just for power, you know what I mean? For motors, we kind of know some of the things we should do, what we could do. So there's no doubt about it. Whenever we design one that's like that, you know, we'll, technology will keep changing, and I got some tips and tricks and things we could do. But right now we got a cool CK2 boat that's kind of filling that gap for us for a power boat. I mean, the Scholly's obviously great too, but if you want a little bit bigger boat, you know, and it's even a little bit faster, that's a good one to go for. But I mean, dude, getting that Scholly up to 6.7, it's pretty darn good. You can't beat it, because now you can take the Torquedo off, or Newport, or whatever you use. You can take it off, and then it's your awesome just floating, you know, float down a river and creek boat, very maneuverable, good paddling boat. But and I do have videos. I'll pull up some videos never before seen. I've got them edited if you guys want to see some of the fish catches and talk over the day. I know I'm going to go on kayak fishing weekly too, so Justin and I are going to hammer this thing out in even more detail than you know, today. So I'm excited about that. But I definitely have some videos I want to share with you guys. You can talk over some baits, whatever you guys want to hit.
Yeah. So
on a chatterbait.
One fish on a chatterbait, Andy. One.
I'm surprised. It was probably a big smallie too, wasn't it?
No. It was the biggest fish of the tournament, bro. It was a 22 inch. It's right there in the queue. 22 inch largemouth. It was like 6.5 pounds. It's real interesting what the strategy was and how it worked. I mean, and Bailey, you can pull that in whenever you want out, but I'll talk about, so day one. So here's the funniest part of the story. Yeah. You guys can see the funniest part of the story is on day one. It didn't come up. I heard it for a second.
Let's see. I'm trying to add it to the stage here. Oh, here. Can you see it now? The stage.
There we go.
Yeah, it's just full screen.
It's in that little foam pit right behind that. And the 8 inches of water, 10 inches of water. This is the first fish of day two. When I was in fourth place after day one. So it's the very first fish. It's just monster.
That's dangerous throwing a chatterbait and all that wood, too.
Yeah, you got to be very accurate with your casting.
Is that a lamprey on it too? Wow.
The lamprey, yeah. I don't know. Project Z chatterbait. I'll back up and see that again, the lamprey on it.
Yeah, we'll pull it up in a second again.
Yeah.
The dang ski goggles is what I was laughing at when you first showed me this clip.
Oh, those are good. And you put like foam inserts on the back to cut out light penetration too, didn't you?
Look at it here. Watch. Oh, my old faithful. Pack it up. Oh, sorry, I was messing with it too at the same time. But yeah, you can see those are just Smith Optics Pursuit glasses. Gotcha. They're not. I don't know if they're originally made for fishing or what they're actually for.
That fish got some air, Drew.
Yeah, it did.
Fish did get some air for a 6 pounder, 6.5 pounder. Yeah, it did.
Yes.
Oh, that, my old
faithful Project Z.
Ready to go snowboarding after this.
Yeah. Me too. I'm ready to go. Let's go.
That was a Project Z chatterbait with a chatter spike on it. If you keep playing it, you'll see the next angle shows just kind of how big. You can tell like how fat.
Inches. Oh,
yeah. Solid 6.5-ish.
Oh, that's a great way to start the tournament. Belly. Warning on final day. Bassmaster Pack Series Championship.
That's awesome, dude.
But yeah, that was a cool catch. So what you were looking, guys,
real fast, Drew, I got to give you a shout out here. So this is what you see. People just saw like seven different camera angles and you walking through this. That is professional. That is next level going out of your way. It's one for content sake, sponsors, and also just for people to see the full realm of everything that's going on. That was awesome.
I mean, I did it too, just guys with just two GoPros. I mean, you know, I cut in on one that made it look different. And then I changed the angle when I'm releasing it, like you're saying, Bailey, just so that you can get the water and you guys see the water. So it looks like I'm using all these cameras, but really it's just two. And I just run the one behind me full time, you know, and then the one in front, I only hit, you know, just for the kind of hero shot to hold it up, you know, or sometimes I'll hit it in the middle of a fight of a fish. Once they're on, I'll just tap it so you don't have to like burn a bunch of data. It's not like you're scrubbing through tons of footage at the end of the day. It's just that one behind you is all you got to worry about, really. So anyway, but it was cool to see them put that on the Bassmaster Classic screen when I'm on the stage, you know, behind me. And that's kind of the premise of that Kayak Adventure series, where we have the results in those theaters and we're going to be able to put people's footage on that big screen. That's the idea. So I know it's a little bit more entertaining when we get to see those fish catches fresh, but that slew behind me when you guys saw that. So basically what I did is I would start at that spot. The largemouth bite was a little bit more consistent. You know what I mean? It's a little safer because the smallmouth are in the main river that's crystal clear and falling and dropping and getting clear by the day. And they are hard to catch when it's that clear. But the slew that you saw all behind me in that clip, when you go back and watch that clip, people will see it. I'll post it on my page. I think Z-Man already posted it. That's all back there's a slew. There's beavers back there and a lot of wood. And the beavers stir it up. It's murky because beavers. It's not murky because of the last rain, you know, last flood, and it just stays muddy. No, it's just kind of muddy from the beavers. And so where I caught that fish was right on the edge of that clear water, meeting the murky water. So it was kind of like, you know, it goes from 10-foot visibility to like 2 or 3, kind of where that fish was. A nice 2-foot of visibility.
Ambush spot.
Yeah. So I threw the chatterbait because it was easy on the backside of that log. I knew I could kind of hit that spot, hit the log, bounce it off in that little foam pit. And the chatterbait to me, and I just know a big bass loves a bluegill. They just love it. It's like they want a big brim. They do. And so I've caught so many fish on that breaking brim pattern, Project Z chatterbait. And now with the chatter spike, it just looks just like one. So I threw it in there because it looks realistic, like what they want. And then as I went back in that slough, it got murkier. I would go back to your typical like Oklahoma style spinnerbait, just spinnerbaiting on the wood. And I would even have like a painted chartreuse blade, a wide willow leaf blade. I didn't really want quite like a Colorado. I didn't really want a willow, but kind of in between, you know, where I can kind of slow it down. The water's in the mid 50s. So I didn't want it to be, you know, maybe upper 50s later in the day. But I didn't want it to go too fast. I wanted to go real slow as I could around that wood. So it was a chartreuse blade. I had two skirts on. I wanted to bulk it up so it displaces more water around it. So double skirt, a Z-Man minnows, a pearl with chartreuse tail, just this bright, gaudy thing for the muddy, muddy stuff. The chatterbait and the jig were kind of more in where it was like 2 foot of visibility. And then when I leave that slough after I get a limit, which I got on a limit on day one, I had everything over 16 inches. Day one, I had like a 19 and three quarters. I had a 17 and three quarters. I had 16 and a half, you know, all 16s. When I left, though, that's a smallmouth game. Once I leave, it's all like, okay, let's see if we can fool one, at least one or two good smallmouth in that clear water. And then I went all the way upstream to this next, I'll show you another one if you want to see the smallie.
Sure.
And yeah, why not, right? We're
coming here for the clips. While you're looking for that, Drew, it's right, what yeah. River Smalley on is asking, what action and power is that rod?
So with my style, when I say my style, I think a lot of people know I've talked about this a lot. I just power fish. I try to prefer to find fish I can power fish with like a medium heavy action. Typically, I use different length rods depending on the size of the river where I'm fishing. Could be as long as 7'6" on the Susquehanna or somewhere with real crystal clear water. I can just launch it and have tons of leverage. You know, I need long, long casts. Or if I'm in a small creek, it could be 6'7". But I try to keep all my rods and I'm throwing the spinnerbaits, chatterbaits, buzzbaits, swimbaits on the same length and same power just so I can have the same feel when I pick up the other one and make the cast, right? It's just, it's like, you know how it is, the first cast. If you go from a 7'6" to a 6'7", it's way off the mark. Well, that could cost you. You could get hung up. You could miss the fish. You could spook it. It could definitely cost you. So I keep them all the same as sort of a Bryson DeChambeau in golf setup, right, where they're all the clubs are the same length. So his backswing, everything feels the exact same. So in this particular tournament, I was using 7'3". Pretty much every rod, I think, was 7'3", medium heavy, and 30-pound Sunline SX1 braid. I had a couple with fluorocarbon on for that clear water. Never really ended up using them or needing them. But yeah, this next clip. So I go way upstream after day one. I had a good limit on my way upstream. Just so you know, my Torquedo did give me a problem, and I didn't have it for like 30 minutes, and it was freaking me out because it was giving me an error code, and I thought I'd ruined it. You know, so this is the Z-Man Gobia, so the spinning rod. So you can see. Trust me, I've caught plenty of fish on a spinning rod, but I will look like, I mean, I'm freaking out here. She's in a lot of open water. I'm just letting her do her thing, just like you'd be out there, Andy, on the Great Lakes, basically, just letting her do her thing. And the reason I hold my reel a lot, I mean, not like holding it, but I'm right there ready to like put pressure on it, is because I'm throwing 8 pounds straight braid. And there's a log, there's a few logs that are over there, and I'm ready for her to make a run towards one. And I can scoot, I'm gonna zip it forward a little bit. This takes a while. So I'm going to tell you guys right now, just to show you that every pro elite angler, you know, I know has seen himself do dumb things and they have regretted, like, or they look back and they cringe. I'm going to look back and cringe because I have a net right behind me and I just hardly catch fish on spinning rods and I just don't really like using nets. I'm not a fan. I'm just old school. I like the challenge of getting them with your hands, and it's stupid. Makes no sense because it's legal and I should do it, but I know it looks cool just to grab with your hand, but I should have grabbed the net because this fish is running towards an underwater log right now, and I want to hold that reel and put pressure on it to be able to, you know, force it out from that log if I need to. But what happens here is I freak out and I panic and I just start grabbing the line. It's a big no-no. You shouldn't do so. Do as I say, not as I do, right here. And I'm going to show you the front clip in a minute. But that as soon as I belly this, see that log under the water. As soon as I belly this fish in, guys. The gobius falls out of her mouth. No. You'll hear me say it. I'm like, oh shoot. What am I doing? Grabbing the line.
Oh my god, the gobius just fell out. Oh my god.
So, you got lucky on that one, dude.
I got lucky. I got very lucky. That's why I say do as I say, not as I did there. That was really, really bad.
Hey, when it's your time, it's your time, man.
That's right. When it's your time, it's your time. play that next one to hear if you want, Bailey.
You got these things loaded in here.
Oh yeah, I'm loaded.
This is your show, dude. I'm just gonna go upstairs. You take
text us when you're ready.
Can get rid of the other ones, but this is the front. This is the front camera. You can probably notice I hit the GoPro in the middle of that fight. I'm just taking my time. It's 2:30. There's only 30 minutes left in the tournament on day one when this happened. So I am freaking out because I know this might be my only big bite. And I went way upstream to get this fish. I was running a lot of time, so I wasn't even making a lot of casts. I was just trying because I saw ones of this on this bend in pre-fishing. I saw some real big ones. So I knew they were there. I just had to go small and subtle.
Grabbing that line again.
This is the same fish. The same fish.
Oh, got it.
Watch the gobies fall out.
Oh my god, the gobies just fell out.
Well, I guess you don't see it. Oh my god. But you can see it hanging there. So that's the same fish from the front angle. But
that's awesome.
If you go back to the other one, you can zip and you can see the fish and watch the release or whatever if you want while we talk. But that was a huge fish, man, and it took me a long time to get up there to it. And then I just had to execute. And like you said, when it's your time, it's your time. And kind of got lucky on that one there. Shouldn't have done that. But and then the one that I think
Tom Hanks cringe. That's funny.
The one that you. On day two, I'll recap day two, and then you can pull up the next video. It's the big 21 and a quarter inch small. He's the last one. Oh, I got to get rid of some of these videos. It's saying,
"Removing yeah, this video." You got all my.
Tell me to remove them. Yeah,
yell that.
Well, you can remove them too. All right, but anyway, I'll add it right now. So this is what happened. So on day, so that got me to 90 inches. Right. So on day one, yep. I had 90 inches, and then day two, I start in that slough again, right? I go up, start in the slough. And then I had that big one that we just saw, the 22. That was actually on day two. And then I had a 16 in that slough, and I missed three others. I'll pause it and set up the scene here. I missed three others in that slough. So I'm very nervous because now I went around the slough a second time hoping to get bit again. So I wanted to leave with a limit like I did on day one, because that makes you feel comfortable, especially going out in that clear water. Well, the night before, even though it's a little bit of blue sky there, it was mostly cloudy that this day and a little bit drizzly and cloudy. And that's what they were predicting. So I knew to catch those fish, I either had to go finesse or like I did on day one in the bluebird skies or really big. And so, cause it was going to be cloudy and windy, you know, and possibly drizzly. I knew there was some pools with some giant smallmouth way up there that I'd seen. I was like, I went over to Jimmy Houston's Outdoors. I grabbed a Zal Dangerous fully loaded swim bait. And cause we watched Tyler Berger's video at the house with the guys at the Airbnb. And he did the report on all the swim baits. And that one actually tested really good because it started working at like 1 mile an hour and it blew out at 3 point something. So Tyler, thank you, Bass Fishing HQ. And so I went up there, I got that, but they only had, I wanted a fast sinking because I wanted to get down deep, and they didn't, the only fast sinking they had was a trout pattern. I don't care. I'm like, whatever. Yeah. We all know what's going to happen if you throw a goldfish into a lake. You know what I'm saying? Like, who cares if it's a trout and there's no trout here? I'm throwing this sucker because it's going to get down to where I need it to get in the current. So I leave the slough with those two fish, that 22 and the 16, I go upstream and I was just making some casts with the spinnerbait as I'm working my way up, and I catch a couple small spotted bass, 14 and a half inches. And then I hook on the Z-Man Sling Blade spinnerbait, hook a 19 and a half smallie, fight it for like 30 seconds. It jumps. This would have been five and throws the spinnerbait. And I'm like heartbroken because I know that's Bassmaster Classic stage. If that fish gets in the boat, I don't think I win with that one. I don't know if I'm going to win, but I know for sure that puts me on the stage, right? And gets me in the top 10. So I'm sick to my stomach because in this clear water, I'm just not sure how many more fish I'm going to catch. I didn't catch a lot of fish outside of that slough on day one because, first of all, you're running more than half the time just to get to the places you're trying to fish, and it's not easy. Right. And so second, you just don't have that many casts. But I knew the cloudy skies would work to my advantage. But when I hooked that fish, I was frustrated, but I was going to take something positive from it. And I was like, you know what? God showed me that they are on, even the big smallies will be on the wood, which they weren't on in all of practice. They weren't. They just weren't on the stuff that you'll see in that video right there on the right. You see that log? That's where I caught this fish. I turned my camera on right after I hooked it. And that's why we don't have it from cast to catch exactly. But you can play this now. This is that Zal Dangerous swim bait. And this is the 21 and a quarter, nearly 6 pound, I would say, smallmouth that, you know, to go along with that 22 inch largemouth that really helped me, you know, win this thing. And watch how big this jump is right here. When you see this jump to the right, you're like, oh my Lord. when it breaches, it looks like a day. And I watch my paddle go away too, floating down the river.
You're a hot mess.
It was a mess. Trust me. Watch this. Watch this thing right here. Watch this right here. This jump.
Oh,
freaking giant, dude. I was like,
trees, smallies and trees, no good.
No good. But at least I got 30-pound braid and a giant hook in her. You know what I mean? So, again, just kind of.
That's awesome.
Your paddle is gone.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, how did you get your paddle back?
Yeah, that's a story. That's a story in itself. But play that front angle video while I tell you that story. Because
you know what I'm gonna do? I'm just gonna exit. I'm gonna produce from the back end. This is your.
No. All right. So what happened is I went to the bank to go. Wait, I want you guys to see the front angle because the audio is a little bit clearer. And
come on, girl. Don't jump. Just don't jump.
I kind of sound like Zaldane. How he's always like, no. But you can just see the panic in my breath and everything, knowing what this could mean. Look at that trout. There we go.
Oh, good.
Get in the boat. Yes. Oh, my God. What just happened?
Anthony's he's right about that. So true. It reminds me of my toddler too, or my kid, you know, both my kids. Yep. Just make a tornado. But anyway, so the paddle goes downstream. I didn't realize it until after I'd already scored the fish and everything, and I'm like, where's my paddle? I need that paddle to keep going upstream to catch more fish to get to some of those bigger pools where they were. And I ended up like motoring downstream looking for it, and at one point I was like, oh, I don't want to motor down this really bad, like, you know, section of shallow water I had to go. And so I beached it, you know, ran right down there along the bank and saw it floating, and I had to swim in 55, 58, whatever it was, 57 degree water across the river to get it. And it was miserable. I had to like take everything out of my life jacket, my phone, my keys, and because it wasn't going to come back around to me for a while, and it kind of stopped on the other side to swim over there. I mean, it cost me like half an hour, you know what I mean, to do that. It's frustrating, but anyway, it was pretty wild. But I got it back, ended up getting further upstream and caught one other little, you know, 16 3/4 inch largemouth that ended up calling up a 14.5 inch or one of the 14.5 inchers. So ended up with that lone 14.5 incher on the string. I actually got hit, by the way, on that Zal Dangerous another time in a big pool, but didn't hook up. But I felt the weight; it was heavy. So I felt like I could have had a lot bigger day if I'd caught that 19.5 that threw off and then caught whatever bit that swim bait. And then any of the three fish in the slough that I missed on the spinner bait could have been a lot bigger, could have had nearly 100. But you know, that's a winning spot when you can lose that fish. I mean, that's a true winning spot when you can, you know, survive several blows like that of lost fish. That's how you win tournaments. Because, I mean, it's hard to fish perfectly clean. You know, it just is. So. But what a crazy event. And the scariest part was, honestly, after that first day of practice, our Airbnb was right on the road that everybody had to drive down to. It was 5 minutes from the northernmost launch, you know, on the river there. And it was crazy seeing people go by every day trying to fish the river, pre-fishing it. I was so nervous. Steve Owens at check-in even said, man, you don't look like yourself. What's going on? You okay? And I didn't really know. And somebody at my house, I think Jake Heppner, he asked me the same thing. He's like, you don't seem like yourself. That's just because I was nervous from the first day all the time. And it's tough. You want to help, you know, friends out at the house, but they're also your competitors. You can't really tell what you were doing, where you were at. You know, I caught him pretty good today, pre-fishing in pocket X or whatever. And it puts people in an awkward position anyway. If you tell them, oh, I was up the river and smashed them, well, now it puts them in a weird spot, like, because, well, Drew's my friend and he just told me where he's at and I don't want to go step on his toes. They just need to go find it and figure it out for themselves. And if they find it, good for them. And John Dalton, Creek Fishing Adventures, he actually slept in on day two. He was on the couch snoring when I left. And the day before I woke him up and he said, you know, hey, I got my alarm set for 6 and it's 5:58. I was like, oh, my bad, dude. And so the next day I didn't wake him up and he slept into like 7:30 and he drove 5 minutes down to that ramp. And caught 93 3/4 inches, the second biggest limit of the entire tournament, pretty much within sight of that Horseshoe Bend public access area. So there were fish there, and people practiced it and fished it all pre-fishing, but the weather conditions when they went there on Sunday and Monday were tough, so they struggled, and that's why it was just myself and Steve Baker, who's the only other angler who had a setup like mine that was And he actually got up with me like probably 5 or 6 miles upstream. Good friend of mine, good guy from Ohio here, Northeast Ohio. And I know he appreciates and loves the kind of style of fishing that I do. And Jeff Little preaches, and he's got it set up really nicely. And he was able to get up all that stuff too. But you know, he didn't have the greatest day on day one, but he was definitely was on the right. He had the right idea, the right, you know, concept. But yeah, that was it. I'm surprised nobody else showed up, and I was nervous about that all practice. But in day two, I kind of had it all to myself and knew I just needed to execute at that point. Barely did. Awesome. This belly flops, belly flips him in the boat, and Gobius just is falling out. Panpull. It was just true Drew chaos, man. It really was. So
it's not true chaos. It's Drew chaos.
Yeah, it was true chaos for sure. For sure. But
put it was on fun. T-shirt.
Yep.
Yeah. That's awesome. What was like the one moment throughout each day where, I mean, I know you fish with full confidence in every event that you're in. So I'm not going to ask of like, what's the moment you think that you thought you won it? Because knowing you, you're like, yeah, I could win here before even the event starts. But like, what's one moment though, where you kind of just like, man, I think I got this thing.
I told my roommate, good friend of mine, Ryan Reed, the real Yak Dragger, you guys know him probably. He was asking us at the house. We were talking about, he said, what do you think it's going to take to win? I said, 180 inches, 180. And I had 90 on the first day. And the second day I had 90 and a half. I was pretty close to that after I caught that big one. But when I caught that small 16.75 to get rid of that 1 14.5 inch spot, I knew I was at 90. I had 90 and a half. And that put me at 180 because I had 90 the day before. I was like, it's going to be tough for that to get beat. You know, but three people got more than that, you know, on day one. And if those three obviously did that again, then I would have lost. But I know it's difficult because the lake gets, you know, there's a lot of pressure out there on those spots day after day, all the pre-fishing, all the anglers. If fish is small, that lake does, you know, it's, what is it? 12,000-13,000 acres. It's not real big. There's only so many designated launches. There's only, you know, 164 anglers. That's a lot of people. And only two of us were on that far northernmost launch. So everyone else is down. So I knew they were going to have a hard time for sure. And I think that big, when I caught that big one, I thought I really had a chance, especially because I thought, well, I can easily get rid of 2 14.5. Surely I had like another 2 hours of fish plus getting up to the spot where I caught that 19 and a half on that Gobius that popped out. I knew I had all that good stuff up ahead, but here's what's crazy about fishing. You really have to fish the moment every day. They change. They were not on the wood like that. If I don't lose that 19 and a half on the wood, on the spinner bait, I never even throw at this log that you saw me catch that fish on because I practiced that stuff. And in practice, they weren't on it. They just were not on that because the water temperature when I was in those days was the days that fishing was very tough for everybody. It was Sunday and Monday up further in that section of the river, A. And B, the river was higher, so it was more current on that wood than there was by the time day two rolled around, and it got slower and slower, and they sort of meandered back to that stuff because they want to be there. They want to go to the slower, deeper pools when the river is a little higher and not to exert a lot of energy. And once the water temperature warmed plus fell and allowed it to be moderate current right there, they move back on it. And if I don't find it, but I think definitely that big one was where I think I got a chance for sure. But the funniest part of this whole thing is, like I said, that's been my plan. I know that river. I'm excited about it. It's been my plan since day one. But when Josh Shrinko won on the Susquehanna River, Smalley Talk podcast, you know, Josh, a Shegan brand, when he won, he's a good friend of mine. We were staying at the same Airbnb. I was so happy for him because he's a good guy, a good friend. But you know what the other thought in my mind was? That's one darn good smallmouth angler. And he knows he's going because he qualified for this championship at that event. It's the only Bassmaster he fished. He qualified. I knew it qualified him for this event. And I thought, that's one more good river angler that's going to find these fish. And I was not really, I was like, dang. But Josh decided, you know, not to fish the event. Obviously it's a big expense to go all the way out there. He didn't have the motor. He fished the Susquehanna. He just has a Hobie. What's the one, the inflatable I-11?
iTrek,
he has that with no motor, so it would have been very hard for him to obviously get where I did. But given how much time he had from late summer, you know, on the Susquehanna to this event, he could have built and developed a whole setup and done that. But that's how much my mind was like so dialed in from the very moment they announced this. Plus, It's my first event I fished all year. I mean, all I've been thinking about is this event and working on it, scouting and strategizing. I got to give a huge shout out to Innovative Sportsmen, because without their rock guard and their steering triangle and their grass cutting blade, all of the accessories that they provide for the Torquedo, this doesn't happen. I mean, I had to get out and still tighten that rock guard many times because you're banging a lot. And that Torquedo is just such a solid motor. It's unbelievable what you can do with that thing and beat it up. And if it's, if that doesn't work, it's, you know, it's like the bass boat guys always, you know, complimenting their Mercury or Yamaha or Skeeter, whatever. I mean, Suzuki, whatever motor they're running. It's true. If you don't get to the fish, you know where they are, you can't get to them, you don't win. So definitely had to give a big shout out to those companies for sure. Yamaha, Torquedo for making a great solid motor, and Innovative Sportsman for those accessories that you absolutely have to have. And thanks, Trey, for sending me an extra rock guard. I actually had it mailed to, he was on Logan Martin crushing it on the Hobie Bass Open Series. And he said, as soon as I get back, I'm going to mail you another rock guard, because my rock guard had broken. And I went to my local welder here in Ohio and he fixed it, but I was still not trusting it. And it actually cracked. The one that they welded cracked in pre-fishing. And if Trey doesn't send me that rock guard, if he doesn't, you know, ship it to the Airbnb there, I don't win this thing. You know what I mean? I don't get to those fish, because you had to have the exact setup I had. You had to have it. You couldn't get to them. So big thanks to those guys.
You're on another level of strategy, dude. Said it earlier, I'll say it again. There's no one that touches you when it comes to strategy.
Impressive.
Well, man, that's a good segue. Thank you, Bailey, for saying that. And it's a good segue to probably say I'm going to be offering some more virtual classes, helping people, consulting for strategy on tournaments, and probably even finally going to break down and get on the fish tips. We'll see. I know Austin's been, you know, on me about it and like, dude, you need to get on this. And he makes a lot of good points. Andy, you're a guide, so you get this. I mean, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing illegal about any tournament angler hiring a guide, and people do it all the time before the cutoff happens. That guide is going to share you tips, waypoints, how to catch them, all the information. You're going to pay the guide. Cool. That's totally legal in our sport. Nothing wrong with that. But why not? Why shouldn't the anglers be able to virtually give whatever tips they want and make that extra income? Because as you guys know, you do not get rich in this sport at all. You don't do this to get rich. So I'm going to probably get on there, probably offer a fish tip, where if you have a tournament coming up, I will be your loan. I will never let more than one person. Because you, what's cool about fish tips is you can limit it to how many people you want to buy the tip. You can limit it to what the tip is. It could be consulting. I think Ish Monroe has a phone call for 30 minutes with him for $1,000. I mean, you set everything, the price, whatever you want to do. I'll consult people on their tournaments, and it doesn't mean you're going to obviously catch them and win. But my strategy, what I do, and kind of like taking everything that I've kind of like, that I've wrapped in this head over the years of experience, you know, fishing my style. And I just want to put myself always in the best odds to be successful and keep a high floor. Cause that's what tournaments are about. You can't win them all. This is an individual sport. That's like impossible. But what you want to do is raise your floor, because winning in fishing is basically being in that top 25% or just cashing a check. That's kind of like considered a win. So I want to help people like at least learn why I would narrow it down to this area here, this section. And I can't promise they're going to be there, but I can tell you that's what I would do. And generally the first place I find on a map, my A spot where I think it's going to be won or do well, usually is the place that it ends up being the best, just because I've done it so many times. I've looked on the map, I've scouted, and then I've gone there and then I've fished it. So I kind of like, then you take that information back and you're like, okay, you keep learning and keep putting it into, it's like AI, right? This database in your head, AI scours the whole internet for all the information about whatever topic. And then it spits it out to you. That's kind of what, when you know, study satellite and navionics or whatever you do, and then you go fish it, you've learned now what that looks like on the map and now what it also fishes like. And you just start to piece it all together. So I'll probably consult with like one person on a tournament and that's it. Cause I don't want to give like 10 people the same information. I'll consult with one person and, you know, try to hopefully help them learn something. It certainly may not win and can't guarantee any of that. You got to go and execute and figure it out. But anyway, good segue to that. So I appreciate the compliments on the strategy, and I just love it, man. I love that part of it. It's probably one of my favorite parts, the pre-planning and all that stuff and the strategizing. And the other thing I do on a strategy level, Bailey, that I'm really big on is I look and see, figure out what spot is the spot that is the winning spot and everyone else is going to find it, and I get rid of that spot. Because if everyone's finding it, it's obvious, and they cannibalize it, it's not no longer a winning spot. Like, there's a spot that's probably the best spot in all these lakes, but it's not the best winning spot. You know what I mean? If like a lot of people are all over it. So you've got to find the spots that are a little bit like B range spots, B level. They're not, but you might have that B spot to yourself potentially because it's a little
especially
bit
sneakier. I feel like that comes into play bigger when I don't even know my vocabulary that I'm using at the moment. That's more prominent in multi-day tournaments, is having those B and C spots.
Absolutely.
That give you better than average quality or really good quality fish, but you're not catching as many.
Yeah.
If you find a megawad somewhere on the A prime spot, there's going to be probably 30 kayaks in that area, right?
Other people probably have found it. Yeah, exactly. More and more these days with technology and with the information on YouTube that helps us just find, and we know where they're going to be on these lakes. It's tough, man. I mean, we can probably think of like look at the latest, did you guys watch that, Red Crest? Where Michael Neal was, and he was leading, he was crushing it in all those opening days and just killing it. And we thought, well, this is it, but it wears out. Like you said, multi-day tournaments, that's what it is, Andy. Mm-hmm. It'll wear out. And you got to have those B spots that aren't really quite as obvious to go along with it. Of course, milk that hit the A spot first on multi-day tournaments, get what you can out of it, then bounce to the spot that you feel like is not going to be found by the other anglers quite as much. So definitely strategy to all of this stuff. For sure. So yeah. And I do want to say shout out to Steve Owens and Bassmaster. They put on an incredible show. They really are doing a great job. And also, Dwayne at Tourney X, that's a great platform. It just makes our sport so much fun to have that app so easy to use and just right there seeing everything live. So big shout out to those guys. Trying to think if there's anyone else that really, all the guys at the Airbnb, all the people who I actually borrowed a lot of batteries from. So many people. I mean, I actually had to put my second torpedo together after it was giving me the error code on day one. I didn't want to risk it. I had a backup torpedo that I just sold my buddy Zach here in Northeast Ohio. And I said, dude, do you mind if I borrow this thing back to have an extra torpedo just in case this other one for some reason fails? Because the new torpedoes, we don't get them on Team Torpedo. We don't get them until May, like probably May this year. So I thought we were getting them earlier. That's why I went ahead and sold it to him. So big shout out to Zach for letting me take his torpedo up there. And I had to re-rig that whole thing on day. I had to, set it all up, the rock guard, do it all up and just strip the other one down and reset it up. I did not want to risk the error code happening again. So there are so many things. But yeah, thanks to everyone. I think, was it Parker, Ryan Parker, Billy Chambers, they let me borrow batteries, Dustin Hoy, Jonathan over there at Eco Fishing Shop. I just wanted to have plenty of batteries because the torpedo batteries are proprietary and only 29 amps. So it's not like you can just throw on, we obviously use the X2s for powering GoPros and in my Tacoma, but torpedo, you got to use the proprietaries in there. You can't just have like 200 amp hours or 125 to get you through. You have to have several. So thank you guys so much for letting me borrow those. I mean, so much thought, like you're saying, had to go into pulling this whole thing off. And I'm just so, so grateful that it happened. So
I'm pumped for you, man. Yeah, it was really cool to see you win, especially you doing your style.
Yeah, it was cool.
Especially in the current state of the industry. It's cool to see it being won that way. And I'm looking forward to you putting out some more content from the ways you won. And obviously,
yeah,
you guys will have to check out the full and in-depth of the day-to-day, each tournament day, because it's pretty... This is pretty high level, but Kayak Fishing Weekly with Justin on Thursday was having Drew on, and they're going to have the full in-depth from practice to research.
Yeah,
to
I'll pull up some more videos, so look forward to that. More videos and more pictures. More pictures of some of the fish I caught pre-fishing, which is what clued me in. And before I leave, I do also want to say congratulations to Guillermo Gonzalez, second place. Dude, one of the best in the sport. I mean, just one of the goats. And I said in my post, you know, when you beat this guy, it means you've done something like significant. Amen. And then when you lose to that guy, when he's won national championship, lots of other events, when you lose to him, you're happy for the guy because he wins with such class and he loses with such class. So huge shout out to Guillermo and Bennett for third place as well. I mean, young angler coming from, North Carolina, I believe it was. He won the North Carolina State Championship. You know, watch out for him. So I wanted to give those guys a little shout out and everybody else in the top 10. I mean, the guys from California, like everybody that was in that top 10, it was a really, really good group of guys. They had a lot of fun with me backstage, and I was super, super nervous, and they were freaking me out because I was asking them, hey, how was your bite in the afternoon? You know, just trying to fish to see if anyone called up, and they're like, dude, it was fire. I mean, a couple of guys from California, like, it was fire, man. I'm like, oh God, you're making me like want to go throw up because, you know, I didn't know until they actually announced it if I'd won or not. But I had a feeling Guillermo didn't call up just because people were kind of insinuating that he didn't, but you still don't know until they call your name. So, but anyway, I want to give those guys all a shout out because these are the best anglers in our sport that make it to that event. So they deserve to be recognized, and they're not there by accident at all. So, and Bailey, we're going to see you there, man. You qualified. Are you going to fish it, or are you too busy with work?
Oh, work will work in the event for that. Mm-hmm. Work will step aside.
That's what I thought.
You got to go all out.
Yeah, you qualify.
You requalify with a win, right? So, like the classic itself.
I think I'm qualified just for winning.
You should just text Steve and be like, Drew's not allowed in next year. Yeah. He's actually requalified. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's
at the end of the day, a champion's a championship, and if the best of the best aren't in it, then it's not worth winning.
That's
true. So if you're not in it, I don't care.
Yeah,
it was more of a joke. All right, like,
yeah, that's right.
I know.
Maybe I'll be passing
your point though, like, because there's people that think that way, that you know, like, oh man, Drew's in it, we're fishing for second, which is, I mean, it's fairly true. But like at the end of the day, if the best aren't in it, then I mean, do you feel that's 100%? Like, why?
Oh, 100%. And this championship hasn't even had all of the best anglers until I think this year. I mean, like Christine and Guillermo, they weren't in like some of the first couple, and Jody Queen and Ewing Minor. Some of these guys weren't in there. You know what I mean? Like in the last couple, but now it's definitely where the best of the best are fishing. And another, and Russ Snyder's, of course, that was one of the coolest things is Russ and I are real close, and for him to be able to hand the trophy to me, that was awesome, man. Like, just so cool. And so, you know, I'd love to hand the trophy. I'd love to win the trophy again, but I'd be so thrilled to hand the trophy off to any of these anglers in our sport that are representing us real well. Like you, Bailey, you know, your Guillermo's, Christine's, Russ's, Jody Queen's, all those folks that are doing such a good job out there. I mean, but sometimes it's like you new blood comes in and wins it, and they're not a name until they're a name, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? If somebody we haven't really seen as much on the national stage and heard of, well, that's awesome too, because they get to start building a legacy and sort of a brand that we can kind of follow along, and that's awesome too. So we will see what happens next year. It's going to be who knows where. I mean, we know that the elites are on classics Ray on Roberts. Ray Roberts, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to do Possum Kingdom again. Lakes
around that area that you could be on.
Yep, there's a plethora of options. You got people are talking Texoma. They're talking the Trinity River system there with the, what is it, Lake Worth. And it, like, I think KBF had an event there one time that was Trinity River, Lake Worth, and Eagle. Was it Eagle Mountain?
Yeah. If it's Trinity, we should just hand it over to Guillermo already. Just be like,
he is a hammer on that area for sure. But him and Jody Queen, I mean, they had like, I think Jody had 109 inches and Guillermo beat him with like 110 or 111 at a tournament there for KBF. There's also some lakes like Lake Athens or Lake Palestine. I don't think we're going to go to Possum Kingdom again. If I had to put money on, I would say we'll give it a break just because we're going there again this year. We've already had a championship there when it was on Ray Roberts. I think what's cool about what we do is we get to go to different lakes that are around the classic. We get to move it because they always kind of go back to some of the same lakes for the classic.
Is Louisville close to there?
Louisville is very close. And I know.
Oh, no.
Here's the thing, Andy. The very first championship right up there, that orange flag. Was that Possum Kingdom? Yeah. But originally it was set to Louisville, enough people complained about it being at Louisville that they changed it.
Oh, now they're going to say you can't complain. It's going to be Louisville. Just watch.
Well, I don't know. They also moved it to June, so it was going to be a zoo with party boats and jet skis because that's the busiest lake in like Dallas Fort Worth area. So that's another reason why they moved it. But I mean, if it's Louisville, it's going to be. You might as well just be like the U.S. Open, you know, 12-inch high rough and greens that are running so fast, you put it off the green. It's going to be that challenging of a venue to catch five decent fish for 2 days in a row. That's not easy. But at least it would be March where there's not tons of party boats and stuff like that going on at that point yet. But I hope it's not. I hope we can go to one of the other lakes we mentioned. People have talked possibly Lake Fork. I feel like that's just a little too far slash we just go there a lot. I think the championship would be cool if it's somewhere kind of new and different that we haven't seen. We all get to kind of explore it. So for the first time.
Yeah. So. Well, we're going to find out. That's for dang sure.
When do they announce that?
Great question. Maybe 2 weeks before. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
It sounds about right.
No. I bet you it announces sometime in like just a month or two. I don't think it's too long.
There'd be an off limits for that event, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, though. But Drew, congrats, buddy. I'm looking forward to listening to the full download and full scoop with Justin over at Kayak Fishing Weekly. Looking forward to that show. And man, I'm pumped for you.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
You guys won.
I appreciate all the support, man. I really do. It means the world to me. And I'm still going to keep trying my hardest, but it does feel like something's changed. Like the weight's kind of been lifted and kind of die a happy man, so to speak. But I'm still going to be, out there trying my hardest. And,
it's better than one. Two.
What? Yes, that's true. Two. And then, yeah. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. But thanks for having me, fellas. Enjoyed it. Thank you guys all for tuning in and watching live, all the fans out there and all the support, all the messages. Appreciate
it. Yeah, buddy. We appreciate you. And we'll be talking to you real soon, Drew.
All right. Later.
Bye. See you, bro.
See you.
Well, there you have it, folks. The Bassmaster Kayak Champion this year on 10 Killer. Doing it his way. No shocker there. You're not going to change Drew one way or another on how he's going to fish. But actually he did, speaking of Oklahoma, won Grand Lake last year in a regular season event. So it's the man can just straight up close, and that's what's cool about him. And he does it his own way. So great episode, Andy, with Adam Rasmussen. And of course our pal, Mr. Drew Gregory. Make sure you guys go follow them both down in the link below to link to their socials, as well as all the baits that we talked about from Adam, as well as the baits that Drew is throwing. We link down below to Omnia Fishing. Make sure you guys use code SERIES10 if you are going to get them and save some money on it. But Omnia actually did just post the link to all the Bassmaster Classic releases. So you want to see all the stuff that was released at the expo, you can go check it out there. But beyond that, we have some cool stuff coming up next week. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, we have the college winners, Tyler Corey and Scott Sledge from Montevallo joining us for that. We might have some big stuff that we're giving away. So make sure you want to tune in for that so you can hear how to enter, because it's stuff everybody can use, and you're going to have your own pick. The winner will be able to pick out their specific item that they like. And then the guest for next week, you guys will have to wait and tune into the Serious Angler social to figure out who it's going to be. But it's going to be a pretty big guest. I'm excited for it. We're trying to confirm the last minute logistics on getting them on. But make sure you guys go check out our Instagram page. If you're not following us yet, we are getting very close to 10,000, and it'd be super cool if we could hit that mark. Appreciate everybody that has been following throughout Classic Week. We try to do our best social wise, and our presence at these shows are only going to get bigger year after year. We have some big plans, like you mentioned earlier, for Texas. I'm really excited for that. But Andy, great show. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to tell the folks for next week, but the Lure Labs have been absolutely killer. So props to that. What is coming up for the Saturday they can look forward to?
So this Saturday we have Jake Maddox joining us, and we're talking the Shimano jerkbaits, the World Flash Minnow and Diver, and what makes them different and kind of set them apart from the normal crowded jerkbaits that we see everyone throwing on basically everyday basis, and some tips and tricks and when you should throw them to catch more bass. So it's gonna be a good episode.
Diving into that flash boost. Isn't that the text called flash boost?
Flash boost. There's actually three different techs that are specifically in that bait, which is really cool the way they designed it. So, and some hints at some Shimano baits that are coming. So,
All righty then. Well, all right, folks, make sure you guys check that out on the Lure Lab. Has his own YouTube channel as well. All of our shows in the network are down below in the show notes for you guys to go check out. But if you can, for Serious Angler, go give us a rating and review. We do have those stickers coming for folks that have sent us screenshots of that. We have not forgotten about you. I promise. We're just a little bit delayed with all the travel. Mm-hmm. We have those on order. But if you guys have not heard, we are going to, if you do leave us a rating review, send us a screenshot that you left a review, and we'll send you some Serious Angler and some of our show network stickers that you guys can rock. But more chances of that coming with the giveaway next week. Mm-hmm. Folks, appreciate you guys, and we'll see y'all next week. Actually, wait, next week is Harris Chain week, so we'll have Fantasy Fishing Monday.
Oh, man, that's exciting.
Big old turnaround. So, yeah, Fantasy Fishing Monday.
I didn't realize it was coming that fast. I thought we had a couple weeks.
Let me double check. I am not very smart, so let me just make sure.
No, you might be right.
Yeah. Wait, no, wait. I think I'm talking out of my ass.
Oh, let's look.
I think it's 3 weeks. Somebody in the comments. Am I wrong here?
I'm looking it up, but upcoming tournament.
I think I'm wrong.
Almost there.
Why is my calendar not up to
date? 11th through the 14th, so the week after.
Okay, I'm a turd. Never mind. Ignore me.
No worries. Monday would be the Monday after Easter, so Easter is Sunday night.
All right, well, scrap that whole last minute of the show.
Yeah.
Apologies on that. We won't see you Monday. We will see you next Tuesday night. Y'all are amazing. Appreciate you, and we'll see you on the next one.
Well, that was an awesome show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you can and your app allows it, please leave us a rating and review. It really helps us get seen more, which allows us to access more time and more variables to be able to bring to the show to make it better for you guys. So hope you enjoyed it. And if you did and you liked some of the things we talked about in this episode and want to check out our show partners, all of that is in every single show description. You can click down there. It's got all of our discount codes, all of our links to our show partners, where you guys can go and support the people that support this show and help us make this show happen. And of course, this show does not happen without you guys. You guys know we appreciate you. You're the Serious Angler fam. You're the reason we're here. Appreciate y'all, and we'll see y'all on the next one.